Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Somebody please think of the children!
And welcome back to Little Cuts. Our episode where we dig into the things that we've been playing and are watching recently. Boy, changes. I'm Terry.
And I'm Mary Beth, and we will explain that in a moment. Incredible. This week we're chatting about Weird Girls, The Girl with the Holes in Her Memory, a horror fiction podcast, the best Metroidvania in a long time, Dungeon Recipes, and Bruce LaBruce says, hold my beer.
Yeah, so it's always funny when we have to change, like, dialogue, and we have a script for some of it so that, you know, we can keep going, and it becomes second nature, and you're just like, okay, this is what we're doing, but
yeah,
we're switching things up a little bit.
Yes, we are. So if anyone follows me on the internet and has seen, like, a couple of my tweets, I was in the hospital last week for something, still playing a fun game of and I need to just, like, slow down a little bit because apparently my health is not the best, but it is not the worst either. So we're making just, like, a couple, goddammit, like, giving this fucking, like, heartfelt speech about my goddamn health and fucking goddammit. How, did you hear any of that?
Nope.
Hell yeah! Cool! Cool. Alright, hold on. Let me just close out some more stuff on my computer.
Yeah, you're really, like, pixelated and, like, you keep pausing on the video side, so I think maybe the upload or something is messy.
Right, yeah. Alright, well, I just closed a bunch of shit on my computer, so maybe that'll help. Basically, if you've been following me on social media, you've seen that I've been dealing with some health stuff as of late. I had to go to the hospital last week. I don't know what's going on. I'm trying to figure it out. And just trying to prioritize my health right now, and mental health and physical health. So we're going to be making just, like, a little change where we are now going to do little cuts as our Monday episode every other week. So there'll be 2 main episodes a week or 2 a month and then 2 little cuts a month. This isn't a permanent thing, but just for right now, between my health and some scheduling stuff, It's going to be a little bit easier on us for right now, just to change the format, just a teensy bit. Not forever, just while I kind of get my health back in order.
Yeah, so the health, and then also, like, I'm very stressed out right now with work stuff, other things. So, like, it's we have to take a little bit step back, but we both love Little Cuts, and we have some of our audience that really, really, really love Little Cuts. We have some of our audience that really, really love the main feed. And we have some of the audience that loves both. And we don't want to give up any of it. So this is sort of like our way of trying to, for the next bit, ease things out a little bit. So,
yeah, because independently producing a podcast is incredible. And I'm so glad we do it. But it's a lot of work. And we have, you know, other jobs we have to do on top of that. And it just, you know, after 5 years, it's just like, it's still hard. But it doesn't mean anything because we're still going to keep fucking doing it forever because it's the best. Just making some changes for right now for our bodies and our minds. And we appreciate you all. Everyone who has sent me a nice thing on the internet about whatever is going on with me, you are very sweet and kind, and I appreciate you very much, and we love and appreciate all of you for listening and being flexible. I know the last year I have been inconsistent with, 'cause all of my crazy shit in my life, but that's cool. We just appreciate y'all's patience and flexibility and just keeping on listening to us because we love doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope this is our baby. Listening. This is our baby. And it's my time to talk to Terry too every week. I talk to Terry more than I talk to my own family. So.
Same. All right.
So that's the update. Also, Terry, I'm springing this on you as a very quick surprise.
Okay.
I would like to introduce a very quick, brief new segment to Little Cuts called Mary Beth's Favorite TikTok Animal of the Week.
Okay.
Where I share my favorite animal because I saw the cutest cat in the fucking world today on TikTok and I have to share. And I just think it's fun. I have sent this cat to you before. Her name is Junie. The at is Concrete Crotch Kiss, which is my fucking favorite handle of all time.
The best.
She's an incredible young woman who has Junie, a ragdoll cat, who is perhaps the cutest cat on the planet.
Okay, yep.
She's a ragdoll who literally is a ragdoll, like, a ragdoll. Like, always has her tongue out, and like Purpurina says in the chat, looks just like a stuffed animal.
She really does.
But my favorite thing she does is she will hide and jump out at her owner and her owner's partner to scare them. So if you want your heart to be full, there's a really good video for her birthday, which is Valentine's Day. And her owner threw her a Valentine's Day birthday party and all of her girlfriends came over. And there's like slow-mo video of them throwing rose petals on her. And let me just tell you, all of my ailments for the past week have just been eliminated. So please go follow Concrete Crotch Kiss, which is, again, incredible at
beautiful
for a cat account, for more of Junie, the most hilariously cartoonish cat ever to exist.
I love it.
And that concludes Mary Beth's TikTok Animal Corner.
I have a slight one to add since I like this. I have one
yay!
To add.
Yay.
I have been following for the last like year. His name is Bowser. It's Bowser Bee, and he is a beehive keeper, and he goes deep into like all of his like bees and talks about the hierarchy and about like the Game of Thrones-esque way in which queens murder their siblings in order to stay in power, and just every episode is just like an interesting little factoid about bees that he raises. And it's delightful. It's just delightful.
It sure is.
That's just our little corner. But on the movies and entertainment side, let's talk about Weird Girls.
Weird Girls. So I recently saw the incredible new film, Zelda, Lisa Frankenstein. Which everyone is being very weird about on the internet. And I loved it very much, as I knew I would. And I was very glad to be proven correct about how I would feel about this movie. So this is directed by Zelda Williams, who is the daughter of the late Robin Williams, and written by Diablo Cody, who did, of course, Jennifer's Body and Juno. And as you can expect with Diablo Cody, the dialogue is absolutely incredible. Incredibly very heightened and stylized. Does not feel necessarily like how people would normally speak to each other. However, that's fine because it's Diablo Cody. And it is a beautiful story of a young woman named Lisa who essentially goes on a fun hijinks, set of hijinks with her reanimated friend turned corpse boyfriend. With Catherine Newton as Lisa and Cole Sprouse as the creature, which is incredible. And it's not a lot of what people are saying about it that I also said was that it is not a perfect movie by any means. I know that there are quite a few flaws to this movie. However, I think that makes the movie all the more endearing and genuine in what it is trying to be. I think what I love so much about this movie is that it is so incredibly genuine. And there's something that you miss in a lot of horror, like, I miss in a lot of horror movies, which is this kind of, like, genuine heart. And I know that you think with, like, horror, you want it to be terrifying and scary, and I love that, but there are sometimes you want, like, a horror movie that feels warm. And Lisa Frankenstein just feels very warm to me. It feels like a warm hug, because I was kind of, like, this weird girl in high school, and this is the kind of movie where I'm like, hell yeah, I would have loved to have this as a teen. It feels, even though this takes place in the 80s, it still kind of resonates for, you know, weird girls, horror girls, goth girls, or not even girls, like anyone who kind of doesn't fit in. And it just meant a lot to me as someone who did not grow up with seeing a ton of that in, like, theaters and in her, like, horror education. I keep describing it as, like, gothic literature meets 16 Candles.
Mm-hmm.
Slash 16 Candles meets Edward Scissorhands. Have you seen this, Terry?
Yeah, I saw it this last weekend.
Okay. What did you think about it? As I just, like, went on, like, a rant about how much I loved it. Sorry.
No, I enjoyed it. I do think it's very uneven. I agree that it makes it a little bit more endearing, but for me, I think it takes a little too long to get to the plot of what's actually happening for me. And there are moments that I was, like, dying of laughter, and then it sort of just reminded me some of the other parts that weren't necessarily working for me. So I really enjoyed it. My friends loved it. It just it was uneven. But I think the script is really good. I really like Diablo Cody's script. So I really enjoyed it. I'm sort of like, I'm in the middle. Not necessarily the highest of highs, but I had a great time at it. And it was fun, and I want to see more of this kind of stuff. I'm a little sad that it seems to not be doing so hot at the box office. But I will say that there was a group of teenage, I think they're teenage, they're either teenager, like high school or college, a group of girls behind me, and they were eating it up. So I think it'll find its audience. It just might take a little bit.
I think so too. I'm like bummed to feel and see that it's getting like the Jennifer's Bodies treatment a little bit. It's just like kind of annoying that we're not broken out of this cycle mm-hmm. at all. You know what I mean? And like, you know, it's hard not to compare the two, but you know.
Yeah. I do think
they're similar-ish.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. I think my biggest complaint is that I feel like this movie was a R-rated movie that they had to like pull back on because they knew they had to make it PG-13. And so there are some moments that really surprised me because it was a PG-13 movie. But then I was like, oh, I wish, since we're pushing that envelope, I wish it was pushed a little bit further. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I definitely do.
Because there's some moments.
I mean, like, there's one moment where I was like, I love cinema.
Same.
Yeah. I love it. I love that it's kind of messy. And I just am very glad that a movie like this exists and got... I'm bummed it didn't do well in the box office, but I'm very happy it had such like a marketing campaign behind it and that like a movie like this was getting so much attention and marketing in 2024. Like, I know everyone's going to be like, it flopped, but like, I don't know. Financially, yes, but I think it's really important like culturally and zeitgeistily for it to be getting the attention that it is.
I think once it hits streaming.
This is why I'm bad at budgeting, because I'm like, but culturally, and like that, that doesn't translate to money, and that's why, but that is why you don't put me on the business side of things. That's why you put me on the creative side, and someone else mm-hmm. can tell me what to do. But anyway.
I do think once it hits streaming, I think it will find its audience. I really do.
And like, I tweeted of like a I love when my, like, pretentious film Twitter reviews on, like, that I, like, send out after seeing a movie do well. And I tweeted my, like, little review. And it's, like, people, like, all of these people, I don't know anyone, whatever, on Twitter are like, I love this movie, it's so good, or, like, I can't wait to see this. So there's obviously an appetite for it. I, like you said, I think when it hits streaming, that's when it'll really, I think, get the attention. Yeah, that is a Coke Tall Boy, Purpurina. It's my favorite way to consume soda. Yeah. Coke Tall Boys from 7-Eleven. Perfect. It's the perfect amount. Okay, but continuing with Weird Girls, the girl with the holes in her memory. Tell me some more about that.
So, this is my little cheeky nod, because this is a TV show that has Noomi Rapace in it. So, you know, girl, the dragon tattoo girl, you know, with the holes in her memory. So, Mary Beth's not impressed. Anyway, this is the new Apple TV show that is coming out on the 21st. So a week, like this, the week that this episode is going to pop now. It's taking me a little bit of time to realize that. But this is called Constellation, and it is another sci-fi TV show from Apple. Apple is killing it on the sci-fi front, in my opinion, between Invasion and Foundation and For All Mankind and the Monarch show, and now this. They're really killing it with sci-fi. And this starts with Joe, an astronaut. She is played by Noomi, and she is up in space, and something like there. So it starts off, and she's in space. She's like, you know, video calling with her daughter on Earth and showing her around the ISS space station. And then something hits the space station and ends up killing one person. And the whole place is starting to fall apart. And the first few episodes is sort of, she's ends up getting stuck up there alone. She sees something outside. The thing that she says hits the constellation is impossible to have hit the constellation. No one believes her. And so it's following that and then her return home, where she is struggling to remember things, and things that she thought she knew aren't true. For something small as like the color of her car, she thought was blue and it's red. And there's a bunch of these little tiny things that are happening in her life that she is having holes in her memory. Meanwhile, her kid seems to be experiencing something bizarre. And then, there's also a former astronaut played by Jonathan Banks, from Breaking Bad fame. And he is also experiencing something. And there was some kind of experiment happening on the ISS before shit went bad. And so it's sort of a mystery, kind of interlocking all of these little pieces of who knows what's going on to create sort of like a puzzle box of a TV show. I kind of know where it's going, I think. I've only seen the first four episodes. They're going to premiere three on the 21st. But even though I kind of see the direction it's going, I'm very enthralled in what is happening. I think it's very... it's very interesting and it's very compelling. So yeah, that's Constellation.
Cool. I haven't heard anything about this.
Yeah, I,
at all.
There was a trailer that I saw, and then it doesn't feel like it's getting the attention that a lot of shows get. I've seen some reviews, but I literally had to Google reviews. I was like, wait, can I talk about this? And I can, and I have seen a couple reviews of it. But it doesn't seem to be getting the attention that I kind of expected it would. It's a very nice looking series too. It looks really good, which is par for the course for a lot of Apple stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they are doing a lot of sci-fi.
They are
really leaning into like space shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
They must have a lot of money.
I mean,
it's Apple. Like, I'm just saying, I feel like they have a lot of money to be doing a lot of these outer space shows.
A lot of, you know, practical and CG effects, like a lot. So that's not cheap. And it looks really good, unlike some shows produced on Disney, among others. It looks really good. So, yeah, I think it's enthralling. I haven't seen all the episodes. I believe there's 10. There's either 8 or 10. I cannot remember how many. There's 8. So I've seen half of them. And I'm very interested to see where it's going to go. And I would recommend, if you have Apple TV, to watch it when it premieres on the 21st. So that's Constellation. Apple's just killing it. I feel like a shill, but their stuff is really working for me.
Apple TV, sponsor us. You wouldn't really have to do much. Terry already watches all your shit.
I do. And, you know, I'm really enjoying the stuff they're putting out. It reminds me of sort of the golden age of, like, HBO back before.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. Okay. One day I'll watch the things you recommend on Apple TV. I'm so sorry. There's too many things to watch in this universe.
I know. I really, honestly, if I could get people to watch For All Mankind, so they can talk to me about this show, that would be the one that makes my day, to be perfectly honest, because that show is just amazing.
Did I hear that it dropped off in quality, though?
I think the last season, this last season, cut a lot of things that I really liked about the previous three, but I did think it was still an enthralling piece of sci-fi. But it definitely, I don't think, was... I don't think it's up to the same level as the first three, but there are some really fantastic moments in it that made me actually cry. So, hit or miss, but the first three seasons in particular are just perfect. Switching gears, let's talk about a horror fiction podcast. Is this the one you asked me if I'd listen to?
Yes. Because I have been in a hole listening to this podcast, and I am not, Purpurina, I'm so sorry, I am not a big horror fiction podcast, because you have to really pay attention to them, and I don't really drive, so I am not good at listening to them often, because I am doing 65 other things because of my ADHD, and, like, I cannot fully, like, focus on it. So I don't listen to a lot of fiction stuff, because you really have to, like, pay attention. I have been having trouble falling asleep, and I'm trying not to, like, watch something to fall asleep. And I was like, well, I want to listen to something, but, like, I don't want to listen to my usual, like, funny comedy podcasts. And I ended up turning to an old horror fiction podcast that I'd been a fan of a couple of years ago, and it is called Knife Point Horror, which is produced and narrated by Soren Narnia, which I do not believe is his real name. I don't know for sure, but it does not sound like a real name, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. It just feels very much like a pen name. And the reason why I love this podcast in particular for, like, falling asleep is because it's just him, and it's not very produced. It's just, like, a guy and a microphone, maybe a little bit of, like, music under it sometimes, but he also has an incredibly soothing voice.
Okay.
And it's his voice paired with the fact that the stories that he is telling are all in the first person, and they are all incredibly unsettling. They are not necessarily, like, horror terrifying, but they remind me of liminal spaces as stories. The way that he kind of constructs the worlds of his stories, they all feel very bleak. And they also feel, a lot of them, so not a lot of them, but there's a couple, like, episodes that I've listened to that are, he plays with the format, like, in this one episode that I really love called The Smoke Child, which is actually kind of like a supernatural slasher story, but in a very weird format. It's a guy presenting a slideshow, and he's narrating a slideshow of crime scene photos, and you're trying to figure out what's going on. And then it kind of, as it goes on, he reveals what happened, but it's like he's presenting it very matter-of-factly to a crowd of people. And so, and it's like presented as a recording of his presentation. And so it's just like really interesting ways of playing with audio format. And okay. But also the stories are just incredibly weird and chilling in a way that, like, you know, if you listen to the No Sleep podcast, I have not listened to them in years, but a lot of the stories are more traditionally like spooky, scary, very produced. And that's not bad, but like, that is one kind of like audio horror thing. But this one is much more like low key and much more haunting to me.
What I love about this, though, Mary Beth, is that you have chosen to listen to something that you've described as unsettling and haunting to fall asleep to. I think that is fantastic and hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I can't really push back on that other than, like...
I just think it's fun. I think that's great. Has it been working? Has it been helping?
It has. Isn't that neat? It really has. That is
really neat. See? Horror saving lives. Saving sanity.
And it hasn't... It's given me a couple weird dreams, but nothing... Like, see, I see, that's what I would nightmares. Think. I wasn't sure, but I have pretty bad nightmares, but not when I listen to the horror podcast. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
Meanwhile, Purpurina's in chat saying, "Last night I dreamt that the ghost of Frank Sinatra was trying to possess her." That's amazing and horrifying, kind of, in a way. I don't remember my dreams, typically.
Steve doesn't either. And I, every night, I'm like, here, I had this whole fucking scenario happen. And Steve is like, how do you remember all of this? I'm like, I don't know. But anyway, Knife Point Horror, The Smoke Child is a very good episode, but it is not, like, indicative of the style that I love about it necessarily, but the one okay. that I would recommend...
Because you can... They're really self-contained, good. Right?
Yeah, self-contained, so you can listen to all of that. Like, you can listen to that of order. He's been doing it since 2011, so there's a lot yeah. of episodes, which is nice. But the one that I really, really like... And I'm so sorry. Give me 2 seconds because I can't remember its name. Outcast is very good. And Outcast, where did it go? Well, now I just can't find it. This is really, really good podcast recording. Me scrolling through my podcast app while talking on a podcast. It's just like... really quite meta and really okay. Here it is. Presence. That haunted house story.
Okay,
but like deeply unsettling.
All right, so yeah, I'm gonna have to give it a go because I think because I have a commute. My commute is less than it used to be, but it's still about 25-30 minutes, so like that's where I do listen to like audiobooks and I do listen to a lot of this kind of stuff, because while if I'm at home, I'm not typically listening to podcasts or books or any of that kind of stuff because I'm doing something else. So like that is my time to do it. If I'm listening to something, I want to be able to give it my full attention, and I find that it really helps when I'm driving to, like, make the time go by quick, and also I don't have anything to distract me so I can listen to it in full. So, like, I'm going to have to add some of these onto my phone so I can listen to them, give them a try.
highly recommend it. Or for falling, I don't know, for falling asleep. I'm not really sure how if I can recommend that to anybody, but.
Hey, it's working for you, and that's the important thing.
His voice is just so good. Anywhozle. The best Metroidvania in a long time. I would love to hear about this.
Okay.
Tell me more about this, please.
If you follow me, listen to the couple times I've talked about them, Metroidvania is my favorite type of video game. It is a portmanteau of Metroid and Castlevania smashed together, and it is a video game. I guess they call them the genres. I don't know. It feels weird coming from film where genre is like horror or, you know, comedy, and you go to video games and it's like genre is third person adventure or, you know, Metroidvania. But it is a genre of video game in which it's all about exploration. They're typically side scrollers, so they're typically like the old Mario games. But like there's like a huge map, and you explore it room by room, and you uncover the map of wherever you're at, and you get powers that allow you to further explore and go back to areas you've already been through to like find new doors or new ways and new secrets to like continue. And it just makes this whole big enthralling like beehive of a map of this big area that is just all interconnected, and I love them so much. It is my favorite thing. If you give me a good Metroidvania, I will just eat it up. The last really good one that I remember playing is Hollow Knight, which I think matches up which matches up like Metroidvania with like Dark Souls-esque type combat and methodology. But this one is in the long-running Prince of Persia series. This is Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown.
Oh, yeah!
And we don't get enough games like this. This was developed by, it's produced by Ubisoft, and it is from the team that made Rayman, in particular, made the 2011 Rayman Origins, which was a side-scroller that was like perfection with platforming. And so you have that skill going into Metroidvania game. And let me tell you, the platforming in this, where you're jumping between obstacles, I shared a clip on Twitter that was like...
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you fucking did. I was like, I'm sorry, what is happening right now? Like,
that is an early level puzzle. It like gets even more complicated.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh, yes. God.
It's pitch perfect platforming, but it requires a little bit of trial and error. But I'll tell you that it's always, when you fail on something, it is always fair, and it is always just like just so smooth. The platforming in this game is so fucking smooth, and it's like it's a Prince of Persia story, but it's about Sargon, who is a young member of like this warrior clan named the Immortals. In this case, the Prince of Persia, you typically play as him, but in this case, he's been kidnapped and taken to this Mount Koff, I believe is how you pronounce it. And you have to go there and rescue him and figure out what's going on. Mount Koff has a lot of time. One of the kind of key ingredients for Prince of Persia games, particularly in the 21st century, is a focus on like time and manipulating time. And you get to this place and everything, time is operating in very weird ways, and you start to like get powers that sort of play with time. There's this one beautiful, beautiful area where you go out into this harbor and it looks like the whole world is frozen. Time has literally frozen, and there is like in the midst of a warship being blown apart, and there are pieces of debris and bodies just sort of frozen in time with this giant wave frozen in time. And it is absolutely stunning. The art design behind this game is just perfection. The platforming, perfection. The Metroidvania powers, so good, so unique, so fun. I love this game so much. This is so far, I mean, it's only the first 2 months of 2024, but this is the best game I have played. I mean, this year, which doesn't say much, but I do think that this has the potential for being my favorite game that I've played this year, depending on what comes out, because this was so fucking good. So fucking good.
Hell yeah.
Loved
That's
it.
Amazing.
It brought me complete joy. I finished it last night.
That's so exciting.
It took me about, I think I spent about 22 hours in it, and there's a couple things that I did not finish. So, like, there's a couple, I think probably would have been about a 25-hour game if I had finished everything. But it's great. It's meaty. It's fun. It's smooth. As the animation is so good. It's just, I loved it. I loved it so much. And I don't think it's getting a whole lot of attention, which makes me sad because it is a really, really fucking good game. So it is available everywhere. Switch, PlayStation, Windows, Xbox. So it's everywhere. And I highly recommend it.
Hell yeah. Okay. Wow. I know the clip you shared, I obviously you can see my hilarity. Like, oh yeah, oops, sorry, I didn't scroll up. The clip was awesome, but I was like, that looks terrifying. I love platformers, but platformers like that overwhelm me a little bit.
See, and most of that type of thing is like the side mission. So it's not a requirement. It's usually like I was doing that to get a single coin. So like, it's not necessarily like the difficulty is mostly in the areas in which you don't have to go. Like it is like an additional area to get an unlock or to get like a coin or to get like currency. So it's not necessarily required to do it. But me, when I get those things, I will keep playing at it until I get it.
Yeah. I do like doing that, but it does. I'm playing Crash Bandicoot still. Like, that's a platformer in the same way, but it's just sometimes I'm like, I have to walk the fuck away before I lose my mind.
Oh. there is one puzzle thing that is, again, just a side quest that you don't have to do in this game that I spent probably 2 hours trying to beat, and it took me two nights because I literally had to put the controller down and walk away and be like, okay, I'm going to get at it again when I have a fresher mind and my hands aren't sweaty, because I was literally like just sweating trying to get this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I love those types of things. Like it can be frustrating in the moment, but like that feel of once you finally nail it and you get the pitch perfect like placement and you just, yeah, it's great. It's great.
It is nothing more satisfying than that. That is for fucking sure.
Yeah. All right, Dungeon Recipes. I'm very excited for this one because I have finally not started watching it yet.
Yes, yeah. Finally, I am talking about this show because I am finally like fully hooked into it. This is the new Netflix anime, Delicious in Dungeon, which I think is, I can't remember the Japanese name, like what the name was for the manga. But regardless, it is another like fantasy D&D kind of esque inspired anime. But unlike Frieren, which I'm loving, it is much sillier. Yeah. And
this seems to be like a popular genre right now. Just sort of like.
Yeah, animated, so there's always been a lot of fantasy. It's always been pretty fantasy heavy, but I think some of the more popular ones are definitely very fantasy heavy right now. Especially, like, particularly, like, Dungeons & Dragons-esque fantasy. Like, a party with these, yeah, it's definitely, like, very hot right now. So this one follows a party, and it is a brother and a sister, along with an elf mage, and then they have a little, like, a thief. And they're fighting a dragon, and the guy's sister sacrifices herself so they can escape. And in this world, you can resurrect people, but you have to have their bodies. If you can do you can do resurrection magic, but you have to have the body. It's like common. It's like when you die, you can respawn as long as someone can actually respawn you. But within a week. So you have a week to be respawned, or if not, then you are donezo. So they are trying to get to the level of the dungeon to save the sister from the belly of the dragon. And along the way, they meet a dwarf who loves to cook. And the problem with dungeons, it is very hard to find food, and dungeon rations suck shit. And so, essentially, what they start discovering is, oh wow, like, all of these creatures and monsters in the dungeon can actually be cooked to create delicious meals, because this dwarf has learned all of these culinary skills. And if you've seen the memes online, the big tall fighter boy is a freaky freak who loves to eat dungeon creatures. Yeah, so hold on, let me get... I'm really bad at names sometimes with these shows, slash with shows in general. I don't know why. Well, that doesn't fucking help me. Lausch. Lausch is a swordsman, and Marseille is an elven mage, and Shilchuk is a halfling locksmith. And then they have their dwarf homie. But Laos is a freak who loves eating creatures in the dungeon, and Marcel does not like eating creatures, so there's always that... It's very comedic in, like, mm-hmm. his obsession with dungeon creatures versus her complete aversion to it. But it also has these incredible moments of, like, the Studio Ghibli, like, beauty shots of food yeah. with, like, the names on it and everything. And, It's sillier than I was anticipating, and because we were watching Frieren and I was loving that, I was like, oh, Frieren is so much better. But then the third episode happened, and that's when it clicked. It will probably click for you sooner, but the third episode that involves suits of armor that can move on their own in a very hilarious way, it got me. So there's, like, each episode is, like, a recipe, essentially. Like, there's a storyline that carries it through, but it's almost like, you know, not monster of the week, but kind of, while also mm-hmm. having a bit of a plot line to, like, push them through the dungeon. But yeah, it usually ends with, like, a delicious spread of, like, of food made from what they just defeated.
Are they in the same dungeon, or do they, like, are they visiting different dungeons, or how is the, like,
that they are framework? Moving different. They're moving down levels of the
down
dungeon.
Levels.
So the way that it works is, like, they're moving down each. Excuse me. There's, like, a whole system of how the dungeons work and, like, how far down you go. And, but yeah, they go down. And this one, they are in one particular dungeon because that is where this dragon is that ate Laos's sister, and so they are going down as many levels as possible to find the dragon.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I really want to watch this. I have a problem where if I start watching something and it's like it's short and it's weekly, then I have a chance of falling off of it. So I've been waiting for there to be, like, a good number of episodes that so I can get myself hooked on it. And I think there's 5 out right now.
Yes. Do you know who Sungwon Cho is? Prozy D.
I am horrible with names.
Prozy D, he did, like, he's a YouTuber. He has, like a very deadpan affectation. He's, like, he's got glasses, he's an Asian guy, and he, like, has kind of a deeper voice. Mm-hmm. But now he's a voice actor, and he voices the dwarf in it. And he also he has done a couple of other voice acting roles. He was the voice of a robot in Pluto last year. But he's really good as, like, as Senshi, the dwarf warrior who just, like, loves to cook.
Heck yeah.
So yeah. It's very good. It's wholesome. It's on Netflix. There's a new episode coming out every week. And yeah, highly, highly recommend.
I'm very excited.
It's called Danjon Meshi is what it is called in Japanese.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. And to wrap this out with a beer, Bruce LeBrew says, hold my beer. Tell me more about
All right. So for those who don't know, Bruce LeBrew is a... He's a queer director who came up through the queercore movement of the 80s, which was like a punk, queer punk movement that was very anti-establishment, very much like fuck heteronormativity, and also on the opposite side of things, homonormativity. So like the idea that like we have that queer people should be the same as straight people. He's very much a director operating in avant-garde space that is very political in his films and does not like political correctness. He tackles a lot of very avant-garde topics. For instance, some of his movies, like there's one from 2013 called Gerontophilia, which is about this young queer man who begins to explore his attraction to old men while he's working in a nursing home. And I'm so old men. So there's that. He's made a couple horror films or horror adjacent ones. One is Otto or Up With Dead People, which is about a neo-goth zombie
who I've heard of that one.
Ends up getting filming in a zombie porno. So like the line between pornography and art is always straddled with his film, sometimes more into the pornographic, to the point that I believe he did at least one thing, a couple things maybe, for Cocky Boys, which is a queer porn studio. So like,
oh no way, I thought this with a name like Cocky Boys.
Right, isn't that shocking? It sounds so wholesome. It sounds so wholesome. But yeah, so he definitely plays in that realm. And he has a new film that has just premiered at Berlinale?
Oh, Berlinale.
So it just premiered at Berlinale. And I just got a random email out of the blue asking about some queer films that we're going to be playing there. And one of them was The Visitor by Bruce LaBruce. At the same time,
the poster is so fucking funny. I'm just saying that now.
For but The Visitor?
Yes.
Yeah, so The Visitor is a queer and pornographic. I'm going to say that I believe that this is based on what I'm seeing, unsimulated sex. Film that is basically a satire of Teorema, which I had never seen, but was like, before I sit down to watch this, I'm going to watch it for the first time, which you and I had talked about Teorema because you brought it up in the discussions about Saltburn. And so I was like, wow, synchronicity. I'm going to find that Teorema was on the Criterion Channel.
I was going to bring that up. I was like, yeah. Oh, very interesting.
Yeah. And so in Teorema and in The Visitor, well, in The Visitor more so. The Visitor is about this bunch of suitcases that end up getting dropped around or somehow end up in the UK, and they sort of pulsate, and there is a human being inside each of these suitcases called The Visitor. And so we have that going on. The movie opens with some right-wing nut job talking about how refugees are going to ruin the UK. And it just like is this whole long diatribe about it, while we see these suitcases birth out a naked black man who is the same in each one, who is obviously a refugee to this country. And the one that we follow ends up going to work at this rich house where we have the same thing as in Teorema. There is the father, the daughter, the mother, the son, and the maid. And he goes about fucking each one of them. And in Teorema, like, it's implied and there is some that is obvious. But, like, here it's like, no, we are going to have a pornographic menagerie of sex. And outside of that, it is a very campy and very overacted, but to a specific point, And it follows the same plot pattern of Teorema, where we have like the maid that is mowing the grass. And in this case, like in the original Teorema, like the camera just keeps focusing on the visitor's crotch in his pants. Here he is like literally lounging in briefs and nothing else. And is like almost like to the point of like hip thrusting the air while the maid, all the characters are genderqueer and very like playing with male presenting people in female regalia and vice versa. Like it is definitely like you don't know the gender of any of these real characters, but we have the maid who is like mowing while they cannot stop looking at his crotch. And it takes the what is happening in Teorema and ups it to camp level aesthetics. And I'm not 100% sure how I feel about the movie, but it is an experience. And I think those who enjoy Bruce LaBruce's work will find a lot to enjoy here. In fact, like there's what I find very funny is in some of the porn scenes, there's like basically like idioms of that people shout at the time. Like, okay, the sexual revolution of the proletariat is one thing that gets like blasted in like shining letters on the scene while they're fucking, or complicity of the Dom proletariat, or anal liberation now, or let Jesus fuck you, because at one point he has a dildo that is literally the crucifix, but a black penis on the other end, and he is fucking anally fucking someone with it. Open borders, open legs. Get your knickers in a twist, eat out the rich, a new sexual vision for the UK. Like, these are all things that are like being blasted on the screen while this is happening. And it's really kind of silly and campy, but at the same time, like, I feel like there's a message here that is purely Bruce LaBruce's typical modus operandi. So I don't know if it'll ever play here. Because of like, I don't know
if it will ever play here.
I don't know how they would cut around to make it acceptable for American audiences. I don't know the distribution. I could see it being, you know, released on a porn site, honestly, because like it has.
I wondered if Altered Innocence will do something with it.
That would be amazing. I could see it on Vinegar Syndrome, honestly. I could see a physical release on their label with Altered Innocence.
Yeah, one of the posters is a pair of feet with vaginas on the bottom of them, so that's pretty weird.
Yeah. Yeah. There is at one point, feet fucking. So it makes sense for what is...
Sometimes? Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. I've dipped my toes in Bruce LaBruce's work. I believe on Little Cuts, I did talk about Saint Narcisse, which came out, I think, last year, before.
You did, I think. Yeah.
Which is about a young man that discovers he has a twin and sexy times happen. And it's that movie was like more of one of... Considering that it is about twincest, it is one of those movies that I think is probably his most mainstream that I've seen, which is saying something considering what I just said. But then this is so not in any way, shape, or form mainstream. And I don't know. He seems like I would love to get him on the podcast at some point because he just seems like an interesting person. I think there would be a very good conversation to be had with him.
Sick.
Yeah. So Bruce LaBruce saying hold my beer because like it's like, we've had so much discussion about sex and how people are upset with like Saltburn.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, Saltburn, this sucking up cummy water. And Bruce is like, really? Let me show you some queer cinema.
Do you see what I mean about Teorema and Saltburn?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
like from the perspective of the guy. Anyway.
Obviously, okay. Tia Reba was like definitely influenced Emerald Fennell with
or Fennell. Oh, there's no way. There's no fucking way. Fennel, whatever. Who knows? Okay. Well, I love that. Saltburn, hold my beer.
Yeah.
Here's how you do it for real, if you really want to be subversive.
And this movie sure is subversive.
Love that. I need to watch more of his stuff, I think.
He's an interesting one. And I think he's an interesting person because of coming up through the queercore movement. And he is definitely even... You know, that was in the 80s. So now we're, you know, 40 years later and he is still using that aesthetic. He has not changed his sort of style or what he is discussing in his films. He just, I don't know. He seems like an interesting character.
But sorry. Mary Beth Heaven, body pain. Hell yeah. Well, I am trying to watch way more queer stuff, so here we
go. Maybe start with Otto or L.A. Zombie, if you are curious about his work. And that is like, I mean, that's not like, that is almost jumping in the deep end, but like, maybe I like
It doesn't sound like there's like a way to like really start.
I mean, ironically, being like, if you just want to dip your toes in, Saint Narcisse is probably his most... of the ones I've seen, his most refined, thank you, Perpita. His most refined type of film. And it feels like this is going to sound pejorative, but it feels like a real movie, like telling a story. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to more of the avant-garde art stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Like, yeah. Like, so it doesn't, a lot of the time when like the avant-garde stuff, it feels more like scenes kind of like loosely stitched together rather than like a full plot. Cause the whole point is like the aesthetic experience,
yes.
Aesthetic experience over narrative, style over substance. And
yeah. But
cool. Well, sweet.
Yeah. All right. So who are we talking with next week, Mary Beth, for our main feed episode?
Next week, we are chatting with Nick Todi and Rachel Kumpf, two of the filmmakers behind the found footage film It Doesn't Get Any Better Than This. They are also the founders of the indie press Die Die Books. And they brought with them the 1983 animated special Mickey's Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
Which is actually a very fun conversation because they know a lot about it. And also Nick loves Christmas specials. So it's a fascinating conversation.
Christmas isn't until we say it dies. That's scarred for life. And, you know, I was thinking about the release model, and you guys will listen to it as we get into it, for It Doesn't Get Any Better Than This. And what a very analog way of presenting a movie. Do you know what I mean? With like the, its release model, but
yeah,
more on that next week.
More on that next week. All right, friends, you've heard from us. We want to hear from you. Did you watch, play, or listen to anything that we did this week? Do you have suggestions for things we should be covering? You can let us know by sending us an email at scarredforlifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us directly on social media. I am at mbmcandrews on Twitter and at mb.mcandrews on Instagram.
And I'm at Gailey Dreadful.
And of course, gotta follow the podcast. We are at Sky Podcast on Blue Sky and Twitter, and at Scarred for Life Podcast on Instagram.
And please don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe. And don't forget to help support us through Patreon if you'd like to.
Thank you to Eric Power for our artwork. Thank you to Sean Keller for our music. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please stay safe out there. But most importantly, stay creepy.
And until next time.